Well, we've made our way up the road here in Nashville for the 2017 Getty Music Worship Conference Sing. Hi, I'm Byron Tyler. So glad to have you along on this edition of Mid-South Viewpoint. And some amazing things have been happening over the last couple of days, not to mention what took place last night. But before we get into any of that, I want to introduce and welcome the director of Lifeway Worship, Mike Harlan. Mike, welcome to Bot Radio Network.
Thank you, Byron. And I've been a big fan of Bot Radio for a long time. We have an affiliate station here in Middle Tennessee that my car radio is usually tuned to most of the time. So thank you for your ministry. It really is a ministry. We're grateful for all the ways that you serve the body.
I really appreciate that. That means a lot, especially from someone who is engaging in ministry daily, quite involved with encouraging churches, trying to help build churches. Of course, the area you specialize in is worship. Mm. But even when we're involved in the midst of ministry, we need to be filled up ourselves. We need
Absolutely.
Our tanks to be filled up, don't we?
Oh, I think so. My mind goes to that story when Jesus was moving through the crowd of people and he asked his disciples, "Who touched my robe?" And they said, "Lord, everybody's touching you. What do you mean? Who touched your robe?" And I think the principle there is that when you serve, when you touch, you're actually spending energy. You're spending resources. You're what you are,
yep.
Your spirit. Boy, that is so true in ministry. You better be replenishing it. You better be listening to great preaching. You better be listening to great music. You better be in the Word. You better be in prayer. You need to be in fellowship with other believers. If you are serving in ministry, you better have something coming into your life to replenish what is going out.
Many that possibly will envy your job. You have the privilege, as I stated, being the director of Lifeway Worship. You direct some 30 employees on your staff, and you get to work with some of the top Christian writers and arrangers.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Well, what Lifeway Worship exists to do is resource the church in all things music and worship ministry. We also resource the church with church supplies. A lot of people may not think about that when they think about worship, but we also steward that responsibility for Lifeway. But because of that responsibility, we do get to work with great songwriters, great artists, where we're looking at what they're writing and recording and how they're serving the body. And we feel like our ministry, just like we do with the Gettys, is to come alongside them and to help take what they're doing and how God is gifting them and speaking to them and helping their resources find their way into the larger church. That's what we exist to do, and it's a privilege to do that.
I understand that you learned a lot about ministry through your experience with football and baseball teams.
yeah, that's, I grew up playing ball. I went to college on a baseball scholarship. I often say, I'm surprised you would ask that, but it is funny. I say from time to time, and most of what I learned about ministry, I learned on a football field. I guess the aspect of teamwork, of working together, of serving each other in different roles and capacities, all of those lessons learned on a football field or a baseball field for sure.
When you talk about your passion for raising up the next generation mm-hmm. of worship leaders, what goes through your mind? What are some of your concerns about that?
Well, I do feel like it's what God's called me to do in this season of my life. I feel like the entire Bible story is one of receiving the gospel of grace, growing in it, and then finding ways to give it away, invite and encourage and compel others to be a part of God's redemption plan. And so all of us are on that journey. I was just studying this week, 1 Timothy 3, it says, "Not many of the young should be overseers." Implying, I don't think more than implying, but really directing us that we come to faith in Christ, we grow in our faith, and then we come to that place where we begin to teach and mentor and encourage others. And that's the season of life that I'm in now. I spend a lot of time on college campuses. I teach at Liberty University as an adjunct faculty, part of my work at Lifeway, and I go to colleges and seminaries everywhere to try to help young people understand this journey that they're on. I haven't arrived anywhere. I'm just a few more miles down the road, and some of them are. God is faithful on this journey, that there are life lessons and principles to learn along the way. My job at this part of my life is to encourage, inspire, equip that next generation to take my place.
And Mike, how do you do that? How do you advise these young potential worship leaders, who like to pull their guitar out of the case and write songs, and they would like to possibly be used in a way of worship leading. What are some things that they need to be prepared for as they move that direction?
Byron, I think of it in concentric circles. So if you can just picture three circles, a small one, one slightly larger, one slightly larger. I would tell any artist or any aspiring songwriter, focus on that smallest circle first, and that would be represented by your own personal relationship with the Lord. There needs to be some spiritual disciplines in your life that are developing you as a disciple of Christ. You're reading the Word. You're spending time in prayer. You're interacting with other believers. There's some spiritual disciplines that you're cultivating. That next circle would be your immediate circle of influence. And that's where the songs and the ministries first experience. It's your family. It's the people in your small group. It's the folks on your dorm hall if you're a student in university. It's the people in your community of faith where your ministry is first experienced. And it happens there. And those people encourage you and help you along the way. And then as God ordains and as He allows, the ministry sometimes can grow outside that circle into a larger circle that might even go into places that you will never personally visit, and yet your music, your ministry reaches there. God really is the one that orchestrates that process. The mistake I see young artists make is when they begin to focus on that largest circle first. When they say, I want to be in the arena, I want to have the big concert ministry, I want to have the Chris Tomlin song, and they go for that, and they haven't even really figured out that first circle, and maybe they haven't even figured out that second circle either. Wow. So I would tell any young artist, focus on the small circles first. God opens up the world when it's time for that to happen.
That's great. What do you think makes an effective worship song?
Oh, that's a great, great question. Well, first of all, it's biblically accurate. It's true to the Word, and it has something of substance to it. Now, I will also add that there are some songs and expressions that can only be a worship expression that aren't necessarily theologically deep in concept. But even that is very theological in and of itself. But first of all, is the song true? And the second thing I would say is the song beautiful? Does it have an aesthetic quality about it that's well crafted, that's interesting to listen to, that's memorable and singable by a church and singable by a congregation? And then the third thing I would say to any writer, and many songs, by the way, will meet those first criteria, but will never be heard outside a small circle because it doesn't meet the third one. The third one is it unique? Is this a song that in a unique way expresses this concept, or musically does it in a way that's unique and distinguishable from many other songs you've heard?
Right.
So is it true? Is it well done? Is it unique? And if it's all three of those things, there's a good chance somebody somewhere is going to want to sing it.
Is there a process or a line where a song goes from being a song to an anointed song?
Oh, wow.
That can move the church to worship and revival?
Well, I wish I knew that formula. I wish I knew do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and number 6 will happen. I don't know that formula. I think God at times just makes his own choices about, I'm going to raise this song up. I mean, I can think of a couple of songs. I won't mention them by name because I don't want to offend any songwriters, but I can think of songs that I could critique and tell you why this song's not a good song. But for God and his purposes, God has chosen to use it across the world, and many people have been encouraged and even inspired by them. And so there's no one single answer to that. I would just say that to a writer that's writing songs, a song is going to work first in your context. And that's when you'll know that God's given you something that the church is going to be singing after your death, is when you begin to see when it's sung. It won't happen because you had a great demo or that you sent it to the right person. It will happen because when it is sung, the body of Christ responds to it. And then the body, every time, wherever it's sung, begins to respond to it. And guys like me try to figure out why that's true of some songs. We can't always figure out why that's true. But you can actually test it, even in the small place where you are, songwriter, even if it's just around a few friends, it will resonate. And I'm not talking about the people that love everything you do because they love you.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the people that will give you the truth and whether or not they have a personal connection to you. And yet in those smallest circles, those songs begin to work and have impact. And then it's fun to watch songs find their way. I'll tell writers sometimes, you can't hide a great song. If you write a great song that God intends the church to sing, you can't hide it. It won't be about how well you can promote it. It'll be about the fact the character of the song itself will take it where it goes. And the example I usually give is, you know, there was a young theologian sitting in his room by himself, and he writes a hymn now 500 years ago that we still sing today, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. Martin Luther writes that. Well, we don't sing it today because he had a good publisher, and we don't sing it today because his demo was awesome and he got it to the right company to make the record with. We sing it today because God raised that song up in that young man's heart, and it found its way because of the character and the nature of the song itself, not because he was smart enough to publicize it. So writers ought to relax about that. focus on writing great songs and let God do the rest, because he really can and does. And he will use methods and contexts and ways that you could never manipulate or orchestrate, even if you knew how. That's what God does.
I know we've got to wrap up here, but what are some ways Lifeway, through what you do at Lifeway Worship, can assist listeners right now, pastors, music worship leaders, some of the resources that you can provide?
Thank you for the opportunity to share that. First thing I'd point to is a website called worshiplife.com. which is a website where all of our training resources live. So I speak to church leaders all the time about subjects just like you and I are discussing here in a podcast called Worship Life with Mike Harlan. And then we have blogs that also address these kind of questions. And then we also have a series of events that we publish and produce called Worship Life that are all over the country, and we do those events. And then we also have resources that we make. We have congregational resources at our site called lifewayworship.com, where congregations can find things in the right key, well done, well arranged. Virtually any song, multiple styles, they're all there at lifewayworship.com. It's a great tool, and I'd hope people would try that. And then we also create a whole line of resources around choirs and orchestras and bands and virtually any style of music. We actually have an imprint called the Getty Music Series. We do a very well arranged and developed orchestrations and choir arrangements of great Getty songs. The Getty Music Series, available at Lifeway Worship. So we do a ton of stuff. I can't even tell you all the stuff we do, but it's a real, real privilege to come alongside the church with resources like that.
Mike Harlan, thank you so much for what you're doing for Christ's kingdom. Thanks for stopping by with Bot Radio today.
Thank you. My privilege.
Well, this has been a wonderful couple of days here at the 2017 Getty Music Worship Conference Sing. Matt Merker is with us right now. Matt is pastoral assistant at Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C. And folks probably wonder, is there actually a church in Washington, D.C.? Yes, there's many churches. Matt happens to be at Capitol Hill, where Mark Dever is the pastor, a great ministry. Matt, welcome to Bot Radio.
Thank you so much.
How long have you been at Capitol Hill?
I've been there since 2009.
Give us a backstory. I mean, did you grow up in the church? When did you believe that God wanted you into worship and wanted you to get into ministry?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I grew up professing Christian household, so been attending church my whole life. I believe God saved me by his grace at a young age, but grew a lot in my teenage years at a church where I was heavily involved with music ministry. I was the young, nerdy kid that they threw on the piano in the back while the cool guy led from guitar. And then kind of from there on out, I was learning and listening and enjoyed it and studied religion and music during my college years. And then actually moved home, back home to Long Island, New York, to serve on staff for my home church there for a couple years, leading worship right after college. And then I came to Capitol Hill in 2009 because I respected Mark and his ministry. I knew he had a pastoral internship program, which focuses on the doctrine of the local church and the importance of the local church and God's great plan to glorify himself in the world. And through doing that internship, my heart was burdened for the health of churches and how music and singing relates to the health of the local church. And eventually, I hope to be a preaching pastor, so I've been learning about that as well and trying to do music at the same time. So on staff, I help with our music and with our internship program and with our international missions now.
Talk about the melting pot effect you have there at Capitol Hill when it comes to the people that come to worship, the flavor and what that provides. I used to live on the island of Guam, and we had a very melting pot in our church of different people from all over Asia, you know.
Wonderful.
And it really creates a real unique sense, I think, when it comes to worship, when it comes to a church ministry.
Yeah, it's a stewardship, and it's a responsibility for the local church. In fact, two of the major passages on singing in the New Testament, in Colossians 3:16 and in Ephesians 5:19, are in the context of unity in the church. And so one of the challenges we face, we have a church of people from multiple generations, young and old. Our church has been there since the 1870s. None of the original members are still there, but we have several folks who are senior citizens, but our area just demographically attracts a lot of students and young professionals and young families. So we have generational diversity, we have ethnic diversity, we're praying for more. It's a majority Caucasian congregation, but we're in D.C., historically known as Chocolate City, so racial reconciliation is important to us. We have many African-American members, Asian-Americans, and internationals from all over the world, which is wonderful. So our singing and our just the way the congregation looks has that flavor, but it's also it's a challenge for song leaders to decide what songs do we choose, what style do we do them in. We've chosen a pretty simple style, just piano, guitar, a few singers. It might not be anyone's favorite instrumentation. Some folks may prefer the orchestra and the organ. Others may prefer having the modern praise band. We don't really have either, but we hope that everybody can sing. And the congregation is the choir. They're the ones who are generating most of the sound.
Hymn writing is one of your passions, and you actually brought some of your creativity here to the worship conference at Sing. The worship hall has been filled with the sounds. How does that make you feel when you know people are singing songs that you wrote?
Humbled. I never expected that. I started writing songs for my own personal devotions, for my wife. We were going through some challenging times several years ago. That's how I got into this, because it was a way for me to connect with the Lord and honestly bring my suffering and trials to Him. So it's humbling. I give gratitude to God for it. I feel like I don't deserve it. It's special to hear folks singing these songs. And then I remember the point is not ever the songwriter. Nobody's looking at the fine print on the bottom corner of the screen. I want them to be looking at Jesus. So,
name some of the songs that you've written.
A song called He Will Hold Me Fast. So Keith and Kristen Getty graciously recorded that on their last record. That was so fun that they put that on their project. There's a few other songs we've been doing here that I've got to have a part in writing, or at least composing a tune. One called See the Destined Day Arise. This morning we introduced a new song that Bob Coughlin and I worked on recently called All Praise to Him that I'm excited about. There's others that are in progress as well, so pray for me in that.
Man, I want to revisit something that you said a moment ago when you talked about reconciliation.
Yeah.
You talked about the word is pretty clear about unity. So how do you see future songwriters producing music that speaks to today's cultural issues?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, first off, as pastors and shepherds, we have to teach people to lay down their own preferences. Church isn't about you. Church is the time when we have the opportunity to defer to others to seek their spiritual good, which I think from a songwriting perspective, I would love to see songwriters trying to break out of certain styles, perhaps, that are especially common in majority white churches, and think about how we can write, whether it's making a song that's simple enough to be done in various different traditions or styles or instrumentations, or just me personally, I've been challenging myself to write stuff lately that has more of a gospel feel. That's not me trying to sort of jump into a musical tradition that's not my own and sort of be an imposter. I'm trying to learn. I'm listening to records. I'm meeting with people, singing with people. I'm a pilgrim, but I'm trying to not get locked into just one genre, hoping that eventually that can lead to more music that will help the cause of unity in the body of Christ. But pray for me in that.
Oh, well, that's a good word. So how are you encouraging younger musicians, songwriters, and as they are in youth groups now,
yeah,
and how to direct that energy for worship and encourage that in our younger generation?
Yeah, awesome. I just encourage folks to, whatever you do, make sure the folks are singing. Question and ask is not, was I able to play that cool new guitar lick, or how was the groove? Those can be important things in facilitating and enhancing, complementing the singing. But just start off right when you're young thinking about, what can I do as a leader that calls forth singing from the folks that are gathered?
Listen, if folks want information about Matt Merker, the songs you write,
yeah,
and how they can connect with you, what's the best way?
They can just go to my church's website, capitolhillbaptist.org. It's capital with an O, because we are the capital of the country, capitolhillbaptistchurch.org. And if you go to resources, there's a music page. They can find tunes I've written there. And
what do you like best about what you do?
Well, superlative questions are hard. It's wonderful seeing people grow in their discipleship of Jesus. I just met a friend. I hadn't seen him in 4 years, a guy that I used to meet up with regularly to study the Bible. He's here at the conference. I asked him how he's doing and some struggles he'd been facing. And he said, by God's grace, he's doing so much better. Oh, I just love hearing that. The Holy Spirit does work. He sanctifies us. And that's a good reminder for me, because I need to grow in grace.
Matt Merker, thank you for joining Bot Radio Network.
Thank you so much.
Where we're meeting all kinds of creative people here at the 2017 Getty Music Worship Conference, Sing. This is the first time that this conference has been put on, and I imagine that after the explosion that we've experienced the last couple of days, we're going to see something continue on in the future. This is, I don't think, just an event. This is a movement, I believe, that God's up to something here. And so if you were not able to come to see that this year, make plans to check out any future events where the Gettys are putting on one of their worship conferences. Right now, we're going to visit with Bob Coughlin. Bob is the director of Sovereign Grace Music. Bob, welcome to Bot Radio Network.
Thank you so much, Byron. It's a joy to be here.
Give me some of your thoughts and reflections of what you've been experiencing so far here at this Getty Worship Conference.
Wow. Well, we're not even, let's see, I think we're about 24 hours in, and it's been a fire hose. The best thing about it is that there are so many people, so over 3,200, like-minded in their desire to use music in the church in a way that edifies God's people, brings glory to Jesus Christ, and is part of the purpose, the plan of God to reach the nations. All those themes come together, and you have all these people wanting to do that better. And here's this conference that just pulls it together. So the speaking, the music, the interactions, there wouldn't be another way to experience something like this apart from a conference like this. This is one of the largest, if not the largest, worship conferences in the States.
Give us some of the backstory, Bob, about the work of Sovereign Grace Music. Where did it all begin?
Well, we're a family of churches that started in the early 80s. We've been writing songs for our churches since that time. Over time, the music started to get out. You got to remember, like 40 years ago, there was no worship movement. There was no integrity. There was no passion. There was no Matt Redman. It was just people writing songs for their churches. But God was doing something, and so he brought companies together, brought ministries together, brought churches together to write music for the church. So our music started to get noticed. We did a couple albums with Word Music in the 90s. And then since then, we've continued to pretty much do our own production and our own distribution. Integrity handles all our administration, so we're linked in some ways with them. But we've done close to 60 projects and have a catalog of over 500 songs.
Share a little bit of the inventory, maybe some of the top 10 or 5 or so songs that are really, you feel, that are making a difference and are moving the church today toward worship and revival.
Yes. Well, they're, I don't know if they're moving the church toward worship and revival, but the songs that I think are sung the most frequently would be, for years it was I Stand in Awe. By Marco Trogi. It was written in the 80s sometime, but just endured. I Stand in Awe of You. I Stand in Awe of You. Before the Throne of God Above by Stephen Vicky Cook. That's definitely one of the more popular. A number of artists have done that song. All I Have is Christ, written by my son, actually. A song called Behold Our God has made the rounds. And then probably two other songs, Jesus Thank You by Pat Sabell. And then I wrote one called Oh Great God, which, again, has kind of made the rounds. And so those are some of the ones that would be more familiar.
Right. And what do you think, Bob, is the key ingredient to, you've done the process of writing a song, getting it prepared, the sheet music's done.
Yes.
I mean, you know, everything's done for that. But what's the key ingredient to making that song come to life?
Oh, my. The Holy Spirit. I'm not going to lie. You don't know. You don't know what God's going to do with a song. We don't do any promotion, per se, in terms of like radio and stuff like that. If our songs get out, it's really because people like them. They tell their friends about them. Churches start doing them. And that's how they get out. So it's God. I mean, he's got to say, I'm going to make that song work for people.
Oh, so instead of saying word of mouth, it's song of mouth.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what we try to do is write songs. You know, Colossians 3:16 says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs with thankfulness in your hearts to God. So we're trying to write songs that enable the word of Christ to dwell in people richly, and that enable people to teach and admonish one another. So they're not just songs that say, oh God, I feel this way about you. They're songs that tell us what God has done for us in Jesus, that tell us who God is important, and what he's like, because we need to be reminded of those things when we sing. It's kind of like, you know, we have an emotional fire. Well, we need doctrinal fuel, theological fuel, biblical fuel for our emotional fire. So we try to write songs that do that, that people can sing, that are easy to pick up, that are musically accessible. That'd be our aim. Those tend to be the best ones.
Since you are a group of churches under Sovereign Grace, do you have a particular doctrinal statement or way that you want the songs that you publish or produce fit into that particular category?
Yes, that's a great question. Our doctrine would be primarily Reformed theology, the doctrines of grace, the sovereignty of God in salvation, but along with that, a gospel-centeredness, meaning Jesus came to redeem a people for his Father's glory by dying in their place for their sins, receiving the wrath of God as punishment for us and rising from the dead. And when we trust that that's what he did, we have been adopted into the family of God. We've been justified by him. So the statement of faith is kind of all-encompassing. We write songs that seek to explain or expound upon those topics that the statement of faith covers. But usually we're just going to the Bible and saying, you know, what does God say? 2 Corinthians 4:6 says, "He who said, 'Let light shine out of darkness,' has shone in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." We're looking for songs, to write songs that will give people the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ.
I think in a culture that's in a chaotic turmoil, that's a true platform right there.
Absolutely. Someone said that, "Show me a church's songs and I'll show you their theology." We are what we sing. Songs not only express what we feel, they shape what we think. So it is really significant. It's really important what a church sings. If you have a church that sings shallow, subjective songs, it will eventually be filled with shallow, subjective Christians. If you have a church that sings substantive, passionate, biblically rooted, Christ-exalting songs, that's what kind of people you'll produce over time. Now, you have to have good preaching as well.
Sure.
So, it's not just the songs.
So now, when you get musicians or you get that song that you feel like you want to produce, do you actually work in getting musicians into the studio to record songs?
We do it different ways. We just recorded a live album called Prayers of the Saints, which is coming out November 17th. We use Nathan Knuckles as the producer. He's a Nashville producer who's worked with Watermark, he and his wife, Passion, the Gettys. I've admired his producing for years. So we asked him to do this last album. It was great, great collaboration. We will provide most of the musicians. We'll sometimes draw from friends we've had over years and use them as well. So it's a kind of a family thing. But we're responsible mostly to do the musicians now. That's what I'd like to have us doing, is the songwriters, the vocalists, the musicians from our family churches or good friends, and then maybe letting someone else produce it.
Possibly, Bob, someone listening right now is writing songs like Bob's talking about. Mm. Speak of the sovereign grace of God and holiness of God. But I don't know what to do with my songs. Should anybody who writes music or actually writes words down that they think could be a song, should they try to pursue that? What's your advice for people like that?
That is a great question. I get it asked frequently. I would go to the pastors of your local church. I would go to people you respect in your local church first and say, "What do you think of these?" Get feedback, get help theologically, musically. Go to musicians you respect. Work on your songs within your local context. Because I do get songs sometimes from people and I think, "Oh man, I don't think they've shown these to anybody else. They think they're great, but I don't." So work it out in your local church. Maybe start singing some of them in your local church. Now, if you're not even at that level, I'd say, you know, you say, "I write great lyrics." Find someone who writes music who's local. If you're at the place where I just had someone ask me this today, "I've written a number of songs, our church doesn't. What's the next step?" I'd say the next step is put them on YouTube. Copyright them, put them on YouTube. Let them get out to people. If they're good, people will spread the word.
Bob Coughlin, thank you so much for joining Bot Radio Network. Thank you for what you're doing for Christ's kingdom through Sovereign Grace Music. Now, if listeners want more information, is there a website?
SovereignGraceMusic.org.
SovereignGraceMusic.org.
All our songs, all our charts, piano scores, guitar charts, lead sheets, all that stuff. So you can get that out there, right there. I have a blog, worshipmatters.com. If people want to approach it from the more worship leading side of things, they can go there. Either one.
Bob, thanks so much.
You're welcome.